Well, also at today's hearing, former Senator Joe Lieberman said that Muslim Americans should be doing more to help identify potentially violent extremists in their midst, including the older Sanayev brother.
The leaders and members of the Boston Mosque that threw Tamerlan out because of his extreme views could have said something to the police and even done something to counter his radicalization.
Now, Tamerlan Sanayev's mosque was actually in Cambridge, Massachusetts, not Boston, but members do say he had two angry outbursts late last year, once when a speaker compared the Prophet Muhammad to Martin Luther King, another when a speaker urged mosque members to celebrate secular American holidays like Thanksgiving. In both cases, mosque members did tell Tamerlan Sanayev to leave, but did not alert police. Now, some local Muslim leaders do have regular meetings with the FBI through a program called Bridges, although nationwide, others are skeptical, especially after the New York City police program that surveilled mosques. But journalist Michael Hirsch says the failure may not be with the mosques, but with the Obama administration, which failed to launch a planned program to interact with Muslims. We'll speak with him, but we want to start with two leaders in the Boston Muslim community. They're with the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center. That's a sister mosque to the one the older bomb suspect attended in Cambridge. Yusufi Vali is executive director. Yusufi, welcome.
Nice to be here.
And also with us, the imam for the Boston Mosque, Suhaib Webb, a convert to Islam. Imam Webb, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And start with you. What would you have done? It's all hindsight now. Members of the Cambridge Mosque have said, look, people disagree all the time. We have more moderate Islamic views, and sometimes there's conversation. It didn't trigger a response in them. Would it have in you?
Yes. I mean, I would have probably sat down with the guy, tried to see where his mindset was. Was he beyond kind of a thinking radicalization to a physical radicalization? If it got to that point, I would have called local authorities. But initially, a pastoral approach, because I don't want to see him harm someone. I don't want to see him go to prison. And I don't want to see people threatened. So I would have talked to him and seen where his mindset was.
We should say you're a convert to Islam after, you know, being in a gang life in Oklahoma City. So you have a different path to Islam.
And what got me out of gang life was intervention by a policeman who said, listen, you're better than this. You need to live your life better than that and change my entire life.
Mm. So you have a different story maybe than people who don't have a relationship with the police. But Yusufi, Michael Hirsch, who we're going to speak to in a minute, mentioned something else, which is that many imams do not have the direct one-to-one relationship with members of the mosque.
Yeah, I mean, I think, firstly, you know, the two incidences, I don't think warranted calling law enforcement because the suspect simply differed in his views. I mean, and it was certainly far more, you know, conservative.
But let me hold you up there, because some would say an angry outburst in a place of worship, so much so that people said to him, you cannot come back if you do that again. Some people would say, in my place of worship, that would have raised a red flag.
Yeah, I mean, so the thing that I'd focus on, what was the content of the disagreement, right? So if the content of it was, you know, sympathizing with Osama bin Laden or any kind of, you know, a jihadist kind of view or suggesting violent behavior, one would call the authorities for sure. But in this case, this guy was disagreeing. I know plenty of Christians who would take issue with Jesus being compared, you know, to any kind of other figure, like Gandhi, for example. So I don't think that warranted necessarily calling law enforcement. I think that if the Cambridge Mosque had, you know, an imam that could have done some more follow work, that would have been ideal. But as with many mosques around the country, and particularly this mosque, you know, all this mosque had was a part-time,
right,
you know, secretary. And so they just simply didn't have the resources, you know, to do what Imam Webb and we do at our center.
And could I add something to that? You know, as a young man growing up in Oklahoma, going to the Church of Christ, I saw my grandfather get up one time and tell a preacher that you're wrong, and we stormed out of the church.
And no one called police then? Is
no,
yeah.
No one called police.
Well, Imam Webb, what is your relationship with law enforcement? Again, we're reading in the National Journal piece, about a third of Muslims accused of terrorist plots in the U.S. were turned in by members of the Muslim American community. Another third discovered by federal investigations. So there is interaction. What kind of interaction do you have?
We have a monthly meeting through Bridges. We've met with the Attorney General of Massachusetts and talked about youth radicalization. I've been invited to attend a DHS meeting in 2 weeks. So I think that we know who we need to contact if we see something that might violate the law or threaten people.
And to add to that point, you know, as soon as we learned that these two individuals had attended the Cambridge Mosque, at our center, we encouraged any community members who had potentially, you know, interacted with them to go to the FBI.
And Cambridge did the same. They told
and Cambridge did. And in fact, from what I understand from the Cambridge leadership, is that community members volunteered, you know, to call the FBI.
Well, Imam Webb, you are meeting with law enforcement. What do you think, though, is missing? Is there something missing?
Well, I think this challenge is a new challenge for America. I don't think we've faced this kind of challenge before. We're learning as we go. Some imams, and I'm not speaking on behalf of myself, but some imams are scared to get involved because they're not sure. You know, you're looking at someone who maybe comes from Egypt or Syria, where if the quote-unquote FBI of Egypt or Syria comes to your house, you're afforded zero rights. Mm-hmm. So I think there has to be a greater sense of trust and respect.
Well, and as you said, maybe education, because imams are not used to considering social welfare issues as much as they are deep into religion, and this hasn't been their job in the past. I want to bring in Michael Hirsch again, who wrote this piece in the National Journal. Michael, Imam Webb mentioned suspicion about police tactics, but you're talking about a very different thing that the Obama administration wanted to launch and didn't. What was the idea behind the plan that you say hasn't been implemented?
Right. Well, this was a plan that was drawn up by the White House, published in August of 2011, so nearly 2 years ago. And it was called Empowering Local Partners to Prevent Violent Extremism. And it was a much more holistic, broad-based program that wasn't just about FBI and police going in and saying, you know, hey, you got any extremists in your community. It was more about establishing a deeper and longer-term relationship, not just law enforcement, but health and human services, Department of Education, you know, mental health issues. This goes right to the case that, you know, we've been discussing here. It's not necessarily the responsibility of the mosque or the imam to say about Tamerlan Tsarnaev that what he was saying or doing was in any way legally suspicious necessarily. But if there had been a broader and deeper relationship, I mean, there are a couple communities around the country where police and local government have already on their own kind of set this up. And one is in St. Paul, Minnesota, where you have a very large Somali community. And, the FBI, local law enforcement go in and they, you know, they talk to them about community issues, everything from graffiti to burglary problems to problems in their schools. And this is not just the federal government. It could be, you know, federal, state, county, local government doing this on a broad-based effort. I mean, what we know about the dead suspect is that he was really descending rapidly into a violent kind of radicalism. We didn't get any kind of indication of what was happening to him after the FBI had already closed its books on him.
And that's Michael Hirsch of the National Journal, also speaking with Imam Suhaib Webb and Yusuf Ivali of the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center. So what are your thoughts? A Muslim colleague tells us that there's often one mosque serving Muslims for miles around. They don't have the luxury of different denominations like, say, a Protestant church would, so people are always disagreeing. But if you're Muslim, do you think there should be more monitoring? Love your thoughts at hereandnow.org, and we'll be back with all of our guests in 1 minute to ask, what is Britain doing that the U.S. is not? In 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back. The conversation today in Congress and in our studio, what both the Muslim community and the federal government can do to find Muslim extremists like the Boston Marathon bombing suspect Tamerlan Tsarnaev. At his local mosque last year, Tsarnaev had two separate angry outbursts. Leaders say he wasn't violent, and no one warned police, even though some mosque leaders meet once a month with law enforcement. Journalist Michael Hirsch is with us, and along with Yusufi Valley and Imam Suhaib Webb, who lead the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center and Mosque. Yusufi, Imam Webb, you take part in regular meetings with law enforcement. You call yourself moderate. But you know, critics say your predecessors at the mosque were radical. And as you've just said, there are other mosque leaders who may not even know about this kind of cultural interaction and may not want it. What would you say to them?
Well, I would say to them that you're making your own bed that you're going to have to lie in. You have responsibility to society, and you have responsibility to your community, and you have responsibility to yourself. Adding to what Michael said, I totally agree with that. I think approaching a large immigrant population with a strictly law enforcement-based program just scares the crap out of them, to be honest with you, especially if they're coming from countries that had no sense of due process. What we did at the ISBCC, I've been there only a year and 4 months, so I don't know about the predecessors.
The Boston Center, yep.
Yeah, is that, you know, a year and a half ago we started something called Heal the Hood to deal with delinquency in our community, gang violence in our community. Number two, we started what's called Hoodlight, which is a hip-hop spoken word visual arts program.
If people haven't picked it up by now, Imam Webb is a very young, hip imam and would use the word crap when talking about...
In Oklahoma, crap means something different.
Okay, well, there you go. But Michael, does Imam Webb represent many of the Muslim leaders you spoke with? Some people see the Muslim faith as far more insular.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Imam Webb is certainly not typical. Many imams in these communities, you know, they've just come over. They haven't been in this country that long. Very often their English is not that good. There was a very interesting meeting last week in Montgomery County, right outside of Washington, D.C. You know, one of the people that I met was a fellow, a Muslim businessman in Montgomery County who started up something he called the County Muslim Society, specifically because he was concerned that too many of the mosques he'd encountered, all the imams did was basically go through the liturgy, you know, say the prayers. There was no connection to the community. There was no process by which, say, a troubled young man like a Tamerlan Tsarnaev might have been detected had the community felt trusting enough in government that it didn't fear it. You know, the only interest that the government had was to talk about potential terrorism, but was actually interested in the community. And there's a way of doing that.
Tell us about that, because you say Great Britain is doing it. What does Britain do?
Britain, by 2007, had developed a program that they call PREVENT. And that involves a very aggressive sort of outreach to Muslim Pakistani communities, especially in Great Britain, in this broad-based way that we're talking about. They have regular community meetings. They talk about the issues and then talk about potential for extremism. It's not just cops coming in, you know, every now and then and saying, you know, you have any radicals in your midst.
Brings in, as you say, National Health Services, other agencies,
right,
as well as MI5, Scotland Yard.
Could I chime in? I was part of that program. And let me say that a problem with that program is that the British government focused only on one type of ascetic in the Muslim community. That was the almost secular, hyper-liberal ascetic, leaving a lot of the clergy alone because they were scared to touch them. I'd say the harshest critics I have, you talk about radical language, if you follow me on Twitter, look at how the British Muslims reacted to my reaction to the Boston bombing.
Well, why? What are you saying they are saying, the Muslims in Britain?
They were calling me a sellout, a hypocrite. They were saying, how
because
could
you were
love,
condemning
how could
the bombings.
You love Boston? You know, how could you love Boston more than the Ummah? I mean, really, I think I blocked more people in a week than the Patriots did all season long.
because you were condemning the bombings and you
and
are
And I stood
an
up
imam.
As an American citizen, yeah, saying, you know, I denounce it. So the moderate conservatives tend to be the best at dealing with the hyper-conservatives in my experience.
And so you're saying they didn't use them in the way they could have to find the radicals. Michael, so you hold the British program up as one the U.S. should emulate, but Imam Webb said, well, maybe not.
Look, British program has been criticized internally, and it may well be that they've verged over too much into sort of dictating a certain preferred type of Islam that they want, which I don't think is the point here. Mm. And it certainly is not what is going to happen in the U.S. program.
In other words, you're saying in the U.S. they have to approach the mosques, whether or not it's a more conservative mosque or a more liberal one, and make the same pitch.
Yeah, I mean, the monthly meetings that Yousafi described sounds like a start. There is someone at the White House on the National Security Council named George Saleem, whose official title is Director for, you know, Empowering Local Partnerships. So, you know, the government has been on this. It's just no one really paid attention until the Boston Marathon bombings occurred, and people began to ask, you know, how did this happen under our noses without us seeing any clues?
Imam Webb?
After I was labeled a moderate by the British government, I was declared a sellout. I was declared a government agent.
But this is the question people have, Imam Webb and Yousafi. When people hear that you heard from Muslims who trashed you on Twitter because you were denouncing the bombing of innocent people, that's what people point to when they say,
well,
see?
That was a minority, but they were there. My point was that most of those people were coming from England.
And so the British need to do a better job of finding them. Michael Hirsch, again, chief correspondent for National Journal. Anything else you want to leave us with?
Well, just that this has got to be a broad-based effort, as I said. It cannot focus on any one thing. As one law enforcement official or expert told me, you know, you can't go into the community and talk about terrorism per se. It would be like going into an Italian-American community in the 1960s or 70s, you know, and asking them about the mafia.
Yeah.
It would be ethnic and religious profiling. And what you want to do is say we're going to all communities that might be marginalized, that might be producing extremism of any kind, whether right-wing or Muslim, or Islamist, I should say, and trying to bring them into the fold so you don't have this self-isolation that we see so, I think, is so prevalent in so much of the Muslim American community.
Thank you all so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And by the way, Michael Hirsch also says Muslim terrorism is only a tiny sliver of violence in the U.S. Just this week, police say they foiled a bomb attack by a man in Minnesota. He had a trailer home filled with bombs. He was a white militia member. Again, though, in light of Boston, we're looking at what mosques might do with Muslims who want that conversation. If you're one, your thoughts, please, at herenow.org. We're going to have the latest news and a possibly tremendous medical discovery next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The ICA with Barry McGee. Vibrant paintings and installations capture the energy of the street in this 20-year retrospective on view now. ICABoston.org. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Summer School offers courses for high school, college, and adult students to earn academic credit and experience Harvard campus life. Summer.harvard.edu.